Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We live in an increasingly mobile society, with many of us owning cars and driving around the place for all kinds of reasons. Work, leisure, or visiting family, perhaps. And this doesn't change as we get older, particularly if we all have to keep working much later in life. But what does change is our ability to drive safely. But although there might be a perception that older drivers are less safe on the roads than younger ones, this isn't actually true, as I found out when I spoke to Swansea University researcher Charles Musselwhite. I started by asking him why old people need to be out on the roads in the first place.
We've got a group of older people more than ever before fit and healthy, you know, compared to previous generations. So therefore, they're much more likely to be doing things. They want to get out and about and take part in society. But we've also created a society now, which is what we call a hypermobile society, geared around the car. We're much more likely to have friends and family, dispersed communities that we want to connect to throughout our life course that live in different areas, different places. And services and shops are more likely to move away from sort of village centres, town centres to bigger agglomerations. The age of cities, things like that, much more geared around the car. So there's a need to be mobile and a need to use the car more than ever before.
Are there any examples of how older people and younger people are different that might affect their driving?
Older drivers particularly, you know, we're all doing this when we're aging. You have changes in your cognition, physiology that are going to affect your driving. Not everybody goes through it in the same kind of process, but the research suggests, for example, in terms of eyesight particularly, recovering from glare from a low sun or a vehicle dazzling you from the other direction, that can change from perhaps having 2 seconds of having to compensate for that and having what's called a whiteout where you can't see anything to as much as being 9 seconds for somebody over the age of 65. So between 30 and 65 years, it goes up about 7 seconds. Imagine travelling at 30 miles an hour, if not 40 or 60 miles an hour. That's a long time and quite a lot of the road not to see. Not all older people will go through that exactly the same, but that can be a particular issue. The other one to note, of course, is older people having poorer reaction time. Somebody over the age of 65 can be, on average, about 22 times slower than somebody under the age of 30 in terms of their reaction. That's a mixture of cognition, but also having more stiff muscles and things like that. And of course, what happens is you'd imagine that would make them extremely dangerous and problematic.
That doesn't sound good to me.
No, not good at all. But what we find is that older people, especially when they're aware of those kind of things, can compensate for them. So they drive a lot slower. They leave a lot more room to the vehicle in front. They only go out at certain times of the day where there isn't a low sun, for example, or they don't like going out at night. Always they'll choose times of day where it's not particularly busy. They'll choose roads that they feel comfortable on. And that compensation can go a long, long way to improve the effect from those biological, physiological changes, which, you know, is quite staggering, really. But my concern would be that what happens when people don't reflect on their driving behaviour, it's a very automated process that we all do every day. You don't reflect, don't think about it, you just do it. So suddenly you can have these things happening and you haven't noticed them. They're gradual throughout your lifetime, so you don't always notice them happening till they happen. And also what happens when our demands on us change? You know, what happens if we're all going to have to be working till we're 85 or 90, which might be the case. Frightening, isn't it? What happens when we all have to work much later on in life and we can't pick and choose the times we want to drive, and we're much more having to, you know, drive to a timetable rather than our own chosen times and destinations? These things might become more problematic.
And there may be a perception that older people in cars are less safe. I think I have this terribly, terribly stereotyped perception of, you know, a doddering old chap or woman, you know, with the curlers or the flat cap doddering around. But that's not the case. What are the risks of older drivers, though?
You're exactly right. That is the sort of stereotype that we have. And if you look at the stats, there is a slight increase, particularly from about the age of 85, in recorded statistics for those who've been injured or killed in road collisions. But we think that's mainly due to frailty or fragility, much more likely to be a statistic in later life because you're more likely to be injured. We don't think that older drivers as a cohort are particularly any dangerous than middle-aged drivers, and particularly they're probably safer than young drivers, particularly young male drivers. But they do have a different accident or collision typology, and one of the things that comes out majorly is collisions in turning right across traffic in the UK and left in other countries, of course. But when you turn across the traffic, you're much more likely to take into account all the cognitive things like how fast other vehicles are coming. Can I make that an acceptable gap? So there's a lot of things going on there. And what we did also was try and model that on a very basic simulator and compare younger drivers to older drivers and when they would accept to turn right in a sort of traffic-based situation. Older drivers don't make errors if they have all the time in the world to make those judgments. So older drivers take longer to turn right and make the correct decision, say 15 seconds in our study, compared to younger people who took about between 5 and 10 seconds. In a second condition, we put them under a time pressure, albeit we said it was they've got to make a decision within 15 seconds, which, you know, was the average from the first time. And they're much more likely, therefore, to make a mistake in the second condition, much more likely to knock into other cars coming the other way. So there's something about that pressure or perceived pressure. That's
so they may be feeling someone behind them going, get on with it, even exactly. If that's not actually the case.
Yeah, exactly. And they talk about that. You know, I do some on-road interviews with older people in my research, and that's exactly what they talk about. They talk about feeling pressurised from other drivers. They say they only need to see, you know, this chap said to me the other day, you only need to see the bald head or the flat cap and they're right up behind you. And so there's a feeling of a little bit of being vulnerable on the road, I suppose, and feeling a bit pressurised into things that they would rather take a little bit longer about.
In this country and many other countries as well, if you're a learner driver or if you've just qualified, you get a special plate on the back of your car. You have an L plate or a P plate if you've just qualified. And you give people a bit more leeway. You understand they might be stalling or have bad clutch control or something. Would it help then to have an OAP plate?
I don't know what a plate would look like for older people, definitely. Interestingly, you know, there's been some research recently, and I've asked a few older people whether they would accept that or not. And actually, quite a few people would quite like to have that. You know, I think it reduces that feeling of vulnerability a bit. Some people, or the majority of people, don't want it, particularly men don't want it.
I'm not old.
Exactly. But yeah, there might be room for that. I mean, nobody thought younger drivers would have a P plate until, it was introduced at a voluntary level. And actually, quite a few people take it up. And then amongst some groups, you know, it's a sort of badge of honour, you know, that I've managed to pass my test and here I am in my first year. Yeah, it might be worth exploring, definitely.
What are some of the other things that might help to make the road safer? I mean, not just for older people, but for all of us. For example, maybe testing older people, giving them driving tests again and again?
Yeah, well, I've had a look at the number of studies done over the last 10 years or so, looking at countries that have more stringent testing compared to those that don't. And what you find is no significant difference in collision rates amongst older people or the general population afterwards between those that have more stringent testing and those don't. For example, there's in Australia, for example, you have Victoria, where there's no age controls, New South Wales, where there's a medical assessment from 80 years onwards and an actual practical on-road assessment at 85, no difference between the two states in numbers of collisions or collision typologies. And also, say in Australia again, Sydney, where there is a mandatory practical assessment, it was when the study was done, it was 80 years, I think it's 85 now, compared to Melbourne, where there's no age-based controls and no difference at all, apart from actually pedestrian accidents go up in the groups that have had to give up driving. So there's something actually that pushes people out of their car and into the pedestrian environment that then reveals the pedestrian environment isn't a very safe place for older people to be as well.
Are there technical, technological solutions, practical solutions that would make the roads safer for older people, also as pedestrians as well as drivers?
A road needs to cater, particularly in a local area, for all those different users, so for pedestrians, for car drivers, and that becomes a real challenge because you've got a bunch of people with really differing needs, different levels of vulnerability, different ability in terms of control and reflection on what they're doing. So how do you build that all in together? Quite often, older people's charities and things call for roads that are wider for older drivers to drive on, that are perhaps more self-explaining. They have better lights, they have better symbols, better signs, white lines down the middle. And of course, older people quite like that, and they'll end up driving much more safer. But younger drivers end up driving more recklessly because the road's more simpler to navigate, and therefore you add to the problem of the pressure of the person behind again. Because the typology suggests people have more difficulties turning right in later life, cross traffic, then putting in signalised intersections for people to go only when it turns green really could help. And it does, you know, people older age don't have any more difficulty at a signalised junction. But you can't put those in everywhere again, particularly if you're, you know, thinking of sharing the road with cyclists and pedestrians, always it's not appropriate. So it does end up being quite a challenge as to know what to do.
One of the big hot topics in technology is driverless cars. I mean, maybe they're not coming in the next 5 years, but maybe by the time I'm in my 60s or 70s, could I just hop into a driverless car and that will take me wherever I want to go?
Yeah, we've had the promise of driverless cars for sort of a number of years, actually, and that's accelerated perhaps in the last sort of five years or so. But I used to show my students a video from just after the war of driverless vehicles. The technology's been around for years, and of course it's refined and got better. But what we need to do is address more of the sort of socio-technical side of it and the ethical considerations around it, as well as the liability issues. And they're going to take quite a long time, I think, to iron out before we come to a solution where all the cars are automated. And maybe it'll be a process where more and more bits of cars get automated, or certain roads will be automated vehicles, motorways in this country being an example where that would be easy to do. But again, sharing with pedestrians, sharing with cyclists, it's going to be more challenging, not because the technology can't do it, but if there was incidents or issues, then liability and ethical issues, you know, become a big thing and need to be sorted out. I'm not sure that's going to happen any day soon, but, you know, there's no reason why it can't happen eventually. And one of the issues, of course, with driverless technology at the moment is that you'd have to be ready to take the vehicle back over if the automation failed or in a difficult situation. And we know from research, you know, you go from underload to overload situations. That's a particularly cognitive challenging situation to do. And again, the cognitive changes that happen as we age, it becomes more of a difficult thing to do in later life. So if you're driving and suddenly have to take over for some reason or some issue, that's going to be a big challenge for particularly for older people to do. Again, I'm not sure it's one that can't be sorted out, but it's going to need, you know, a lot of research and a lot of money put into to getting that right.
What are the risks of not driving? If you say to older people, okay, you can't drive, we're taking your license away, get out the car, step away.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the sad indictment of our society that people are so wedded to their vehicles and their cars. Like you said, you've created a society around the car. It becomes the necessity to do so. We're getting fewer and fewer buses, particularly in rural areas. Community transport picks up some of that, but perhaps doesn't do it all. There's some stigma associated with using community transport. So, you know, we get older people who, in their 80s or 90s, saying, that's for old people, not for me, you know, and or for disabled people. And, I can move just a bit slowly, so just can't drive as well. So, and it's a real indictment of our society that we can't walk and cycle more often. Other countries in the continent, Holland, Denmark, much have higher cycling rates over the age of 65. But we need to think about infrastructure changes for that to happen, changes in mindset, because at the moment when people give up driving, they're much more likely to end up feeling depressed. It's related to loneliness, isolation, also related to physical health problems and issues. And even one study says it's related to increasing, you know, mortality brings about death much more quickly. So we need to do something which gets people thinking about using different modes of transport, perhaps a lot earlier on in life, and trying to lobby for change so that we're not wedded so much to our cars. So therefore, you know, retirement could be a nice, you know, walk down the street and possibly even a cycle to the seaside or something like that, rather than being stuck in our cars all the time.
Swansea University's Charles Musselwhite speaking to me at the British Science Festival, also in Swansea.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at yoquierodineropodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.